do something that's going to act on human proteins because it's going to destroy. That doesn't make sense. So monoclonal antibodies, antibodies that are geared toward those prions, is a brilliant idea. So I would imagine that over time, we'll probably see some movement here, and that's super exciting.
Thanks for listening to Noise Filter, your public health podcast.
Be sure to subscribe to the Noise Filter podcast, follow us on social media, and leave us a review letting us know your favorite part of the show.
You can find me, Hope Pickerson, at hopepickerson.com.
And you can find me at Dr. Mark Allen Derry or at The Dr. Derry. That's D-R-D-E-R-Y.
To see and share our amazing animations and find out more information about us, the show, as well as links to our social media, go to noisefiltershow.com.
We are grateful to our sponsors, including Access Health Louisiana and the End the Epidemic Initiative, who are working to bring equitable health outcomes to everyone they serve. Hope, any last words?
Stay well out there, folks, and continue taking steps to keep yourself and your loved ones healthy. That includes exercise, a good diet, getting adequate sleep, and seeing your healthcare providers regularly.
And protect yourself and others by getting the COVID-19 vaccine and booster, wearing a mask, and social distancing wherever possible. Remember, health is a human right.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
To you, the 9-to-5er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to Labor Radio. Of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. I'm your host, Jamie Partridge. Our topic is PCC faculty reformers contest for union leadership. Our guests this evening are Laura Wadlin, Holly Oaks Miller, and Ben Cushing of PCC FFAP, and that's the Portland Community College Federation of Faculty and Academic Professionals. FFAP is a local of the American Federation of Teachers, representing about 1,500 instructors, librarians, counselors, and other academic jobs at PCC. Laura teaches English for speakers of other languages at Rock Creek campus. Holly teaches Earth and Environmental Sciences at Sylvania campus, and Ben teaches Sociology at Cascade campus. Recently, Laura, Holly and Ben announced that they are running for a slate for union office along with two other instructors. The slate is called Unite for a Future, and this will be the first major contested election in years in this union. Laura is running for president, Holly is running for secretary, Ben is running for organizing officer. Thank you all for joining us.
Thanks, Jamie.
Hi.
Hey.
Thank you.
So tell us about PCC FFAP. What are the major issues for your members? Any one of you want to kick that off?
Go ahead, Holly.
Well, I'm part-time faculty, and so I know one of the biggest things for part-time faculty is job security. So we have been under decades of neoliberal funding policies and also the corporatization of education. So this has basically led to a decades-long trend in the reliance on part-time faculty to teach most college courses. So way back in the 70s, about 70% of all faculty were full-time. And now about 70% of faculty are part-time. And so these faculty members are often paid significantly less than their full-time peers. They're extremely vulnerable to last-minute class cancellations, and the pandemic has only increased the precariousness of these jobs. These jobs all require advanced degrees, so we believe that they should be compensated with secure wages and benefits. We literally have faculty who can't afford their student loan payments. Many are living under the poverty level. And qualify for food stamps. Many of them don't have secure income from term to term. And now we have some of them teaching remote courses from the parking lot of Starbucks.
When I talk to my coworkers at PCC, people talk about how it feels like the college is collapsing, like there's no leadership keeping things together anymore. And there's a new mood in management of being more out of touch than ever, but also more micromanaging and heavy-handed than ever. And people are really scared of what's going to happen to their jobs. And we see all kinds of deterioration of our departments. You know, our institution was not immune from the Great Resignation. It affected most industries, including higher ed. And there's a good reason that people are reconsidering working at PCC, because they are not respected. They are not given a stable job, and they're trying their damnedest to serve students in crazy conditions. You know, we all had astronomically high workloads during the pandemic. And what are we getting for it? A new administration that has their fancy initiatives and slogans in mind, but they're cheap. And they don't understand how to serve students. They don't understand education. And we really, I think all of us in our union feel that faculty voice and academic professional voice is completely missing, and our students are suffering for it.
You want to add to that, Ben?
Yeah, I think the only thing I would add is just to say that this is consistent with what's been happening to workers all across the economy in lots of different industries. So the fact that Amazon chooses to have, you know, contract workers delivering their packages is the same basic economic logic that leads to PCC choosing to have part-time faculty, right? So it's contingent, vulnerable workers who are put in a position where they don't know if they're going to have work one day to the next or one term to the next in our situation, and are really struggling. It's good for the business because it gives them, as they call it, flexible labor, and it's terrible for working people. And so part of what I think is like exciting about our slate is that we're trying to engage that question and understanding that like the same things we're facing, our students are also facing as they experience their own work lives, and also as they see the cost of tuition continually increase decade after decade. So our students, our coworkers, and our communities are all facing this, as Holly said, this neoliberal austerity economy, and we feel the need to organize against it.
So you started to answer this next question. Why did you decide to run for union office, and what is your vision? But flesh that out a little bit. Instead of deciding to resign, you decided to lead. Well, and why? And what's your vision? Anybody want to kick that off?
I can kind of continue, since I was already a little bit on that train, if that's all right. I've been just really moved by what workers around the country have been doing in the past year or two. I mean, for a long time, but especially in the past year or two, as people have been really organizing in exciting and in energetic and courageous ways. And so I'm thinking about everybody from nurses to teachers to Starbucks workers to Amazon workers. And so that's been inspiring to me and kind of gave me the little bit of boost to jump into, you know, more a more active and leadership role within our union, to be able to do some of the work that I'm seeing other folks courageously do in other places.
Well, I decided to run for president after I was very involved in our union's organizing campaigns. And those were obviously needed, and I would never, I of course am so grateful that we have a union at all. I've worked, you know, most of my other jobs have not been with a union, and it's very different. But I also know from being active in our union that we could be so much more powerful than we currently are. And I remember back at the beginning of the pandemic, people were panicking and suddenly bombarded with so much distress and urgency. And it felt like a real opportunity to fight back and say, wait a second, we all have this same crisis. We're all going through this together. Let's do what other school districts are doing and negotiate a fair way of moving through this pandemic. But we didn't do that as faculty and academic professionals at PCC. And I've always wondered, why not? I mean, why didn't we demand some, you know, ground rules about how we would be treated, unlike other educators across the country? And I think it's because our union has lacked a vision for how to become powerful. I think, understandably, you know, people who were brought up in the labor movement of the past few decades are accustomed to orienting to management in a way that prioritizes good relationships. And we, from what we've seen, that just doesn't get the goods. There are so many things that we need and we'll never get a yes to just by asking nicely, especially not in the real emergency conditions that we were in 2 years ago and honestly kind of continue to be in now. So for me, running for president is a matter of providing the vision of a theory of change. How is it that we are going to get stable jobs? How is it that we are going to get a better learning environment for students? How is it that we are going to make people want to study at PCC and work at PCC? The answer is a strong union and union members that are willing to fight back and take risks together.
Mm-hmm. Thoughts, Holly, about and why you decided to run?
Yeah, so I decided to run for secretary because I already knew that Laura was going to run for president, and she's the current secretary. I'm also already on the executive council, so I'm current with what's going on, so I can hit the ground running. And I believe that I am the best organizer to run for the position that and it will help us to carry out the vision of our platform. You know, we want a member-led, bottom-up organization that's, you know, ready to win real transformation in our school and workplace.
So tell us about the other people on your slate. Anybody want to fill in a little bit?
Aubrey Baldwin is the faculty department chair for paralegal at Cascade. She's running for full-time faculty campus rep at Cascade Campus. She's a wonderful coworker, well-known throughout the college, and she, if anyone was at our rally last year, she was the one who sang union songs on our picket line. So I think that should tell you a lot about her.
And that, is that your slate, or is there more?
No, there's also Matt Reeder. He's actually running for the position that I hold now, so part-time campus rep for Slovenia. He's a part-time French instructor. And we don't have anyone in leadership from the French department, so that's important that we bring in, you know, more departments into leadership. He's also involved with the Political and Legislative Action Committee, and that's a committee that I'm also involved with, so that's where I met him. And through the process of, you know, endorsing candidates, which is what that committee does, I found out that we had a lot of the same kind of political beliefs. So I got to know him better. Then he agreed that he would run for my position. And I found out that he had had the position a few years back, but he wasn't onboarded very well and he didn't stay. And I understand that. We need a better onboarding process that isn't just here's our bylaws and here's what everybody's job is. We need like actual like concrete tasks and mentorship for each of these positions.
Yeah, and one other thing I'll say about our slate is that Aubrey is a career technical education instructor. That's CTE. It's a very big group of departments at PCC. And unfortunately, right now in our leadership, there are zero CTE instructors that are members of our executive council. And that honestly really shows in what priorities we pick and even what problems we even know exist in the college. And Holly is, of course, a physical sciences instructor, and our union leadership is also really lacking in hard science representation. And that's a big part of making our union more democratic, is making sure that every pocket of the college, every department is represented, because what ends up happening currently is that problems will come up. Members have no idea how to deal with them, or whether they're against the contract, they might not even think about that. That might not even occur to them to ask. And things just go by unaddressed for months and months. And that's not good. We need to have more urgent attention to member issues. And I think having a more representative leadership body will help with that a lot.
So more different, you got a number of different departments and you have part-time and full-time faculty that are on your slate, am I right?
Yes.
Great. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to KBOO Portland, Labor Radio, and PCC Faculty Reformers Contest for Union Leadership, listening to Laura Wadlin, Holly Oakes Miller, and Ben Cushing. So how did you all end up forming this slate? How did it all come together?
Well, last summer, me and a couple of my coworkers went to a reading group for a wonderful book called Democracy is Power. And that book blew my mind about how to operate as a democratic union and how to build power in our workplace. And one of the things it talked about was leadership and having, you know, a representative leadership, and how to organize for more militancy. And the coworkers that I was in the reading group with were really excited about running people for leadership elections who shared our perspective on the organizing model and becoming more militant. And over time, I've gotten to know a few people who share our perspective, and so we decided to come together and run on that shared vision.
Well, so taking off from that use of your use of the word militant, maybe you can describe what are the biggest differences between you and your opponents in this contested election.
I'd say first I just want to say, like, I have nothing but respect and admiration for the folks who have been leading our union for a really long time, and I'm really grateful for the work that they've done. And I think we're at a point with our union in which it's time to just be more bold, you know, and to get a bigger and broader and far-reaching vision and begin to link up with other workers and other communities and social movement groups, and really make sure that our little pocket of the labor movement at PCC is participating in a movement that's pushing toward not only toward a better workplace at PCC, but also toward a better world. And so to me, that feels like what our slate, one thing that sets our slate maybe apart a little bit.
Paul, you want to jump in?
Yeah, I definitely agree with what Ben is saying there. And it's interesting that a book kind of started this for Laura, because it was a book that started this for me too. It was called A Planet to Win, Why We Need a Green New Deal. I teach about global climate change every term. And so this weighs on me a lot, especially having to go through every term with my students, you know, learning the hard science of it. And that book really showed us that, you know, labor history basically tells us that a really strong, united labor movement can win real material condition, you know, increase the material conditions of working people and transform our society in a very short period of time. And we need that. We need to change our trajectory away from basically pointing at mass extinction.
If I could just add to that, Holly, like when we came up with this language, the name for our slate, Unite for a Future, it was in a conversation about just that issue. And it was like, I think we realized that there was this parallel between feeling like, on the one hand, we're just not certain our institution has a future or what that future is going to be. It feels really strange right now to be at PCC where no one's on campus. The college is in this sort of very strange place. And then that seemed to parallel this deeper sense that we're not sure the democracy that we're living in or the ecology that we're living in has much of a future that we can imagine that would look much like what we're familiar with. And so so there was this sense that we need to organize on both of those fronts. And it's so to go back to this idea that we need a better college and we need a better world, and to see our union as pushing for both is one of the things that got me really excited about participating in this slate.
Well, Laura, you used the word militant and Ben used the word bold. And maybe you can say a little bit more about what that means and how your opponents haven't been there.
Well, I think a big thing that separates our slate from the leadership that we've had historically is that we are serious about going on strike. We know that all the big things that we need to win for us and our students will not be won with anything short of a strike. And we also understand that striking is not a spigot. You can't just turn it on and off when you want it. It's something you have to prepare for in advance. You have to build up the leadership layers among the membership. You have to get people practiced acting in solidarity with one another. You have to get people on the same page about what their rights are, about the different tools we have to solve our problems. We have to transcend the divisions that management imposes on us. People feel like they have to compete with other part-time faculty, or full-time faculty feel like they're competing with part-time faculty. You know, APs, that is academic professionals, feel like, you know, maybe their issues are deprioritized. And so people are feeling in competition with one another, and that's not good. And we can win things that will benefit everyone. And there are time-tested methods for doing that. And they require not seeing friendly relationships with management as the primary tool to getting results. So I think that's the main difference, is we will put in the work that a strike requires, and we will orient to members as leaders in their workplace. I think some of our opponents have a pessimism about that. They maybe don't believe that people really care that much, or maybe they've never seen members really do anything like this before, and they're not sure it's really possible, and so they don't really want to try. But I think people do want to try. I talk to my coworkers every day who are absolutely fed up and hungry for a positive vision of what the college could be like if we were more powerful. People want to see a vibrant college where people, you have new students enrolling all the time, you know, rising enrollment, not falling enrollment, lots of new hires all the time, lots of new people entering their careers, not just taking gig jobs. People want to have control over what their classes look like, what their departments look like. And all of that is possible, but we have to take risks together to get it.
I understand you've been doing some organizing prior to running on this slate that's kind of demonstrating your methodology and being bold. Can you give us an example?
Well, we did the COVID Deal Now campaign recently. That was a big thing. Honestly, that's something that we haven't, our union hasn't really done before, which is like a big bargaining campaign in between contract bargaining. Yeah, we had a big picket outside of Southeast Campus, and we won 2 weeks of paid time off for COVID reasons, and that was huge.
That's cool. Well, so you've all been organizers in the socialist movement for many years. Laura, you were co-chair of the Portland DSA, Democratic Socialist of America. Holly, you were chair of Salem DSA, and Ben is also a DSA member. So what effect does that experience have on your approach to labor organizing and union politics? And I think we've heard a little bit of that. Already when you're talking about your vision, but could you say a little bit more about that, how that experience has shaped your approach to organizing?
Well, for me, I've been an active member of DSA for I think almost 4 years now, and a lot of the organizing skills that I bring to our union are from projects I've worked on in DSA, you know, giving trainings on union organizing and the electoral campaigns that we've done and the rallies that we've held. Honestly, I feel really lucky to have been part of an organization that really prepped me for this kind of leadership role, especially in dealing with a Democratic organization. In terms of how it's prepared me for the politics of union organizing, it has really given me clarity in how I view our mission as union members. You know, we're not just here to make things a little bit better at work. Like, yeah, I want to do that. Don't get me wrong. And we're not just here to have a strong FFAP. Also, definitely want to do that. We're here to change the world. And I know that sounds big, but I really do mean that. Like Holly was saying, I think that labor unions are the force that is capable of doing that. And we have to, because capitalism is ruining education. It ruins everything that we love, including the planet we live on. And nothing short of a class war is going to change things. And so when we approach our relationship with our employer, we have to understand that even if the people across from us at the bargaining table aren't bad people, and, you know, usually they're not monsters, they're still in a structural position that gives them fundamentally different interests than ours. Their interests are not creating the best public education institution in Oregon. Their interests are in building their resume, cutting labor costs, making things more convenient for them. And that is at odds with what we need and what our students need. And the solution to that is not begging them to be nicer to us. The solution is building power. And that is a serious difference that I think the labor movement has been lacking for a long time.
Thank you, Laura. Ben or Holly, you want to jump in about how DSA has, or your experience as a socialist, has shaped your approach to union organizing?
Sure. I actually came to socialism through teaching about the science of climate change. It wasn't a huge leap for me to make the connection between the climate crisis and capitalism. And so I already mentioned that I read that book, A Planet to Win. That was a DSA political education event that we ran in our chapter.
KBOO, Portland, Oregon, bridging the gap between prisons, prisoners, and the community. This is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification.